Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 218. It is a very, very busy time in Portugal. We have 6 match days left. Match day 28 coming up this weekend. Next week, we have a lot of midweek football. On Tuesday, Sporting will be playing Famalicão in that makeup match that was postponed about a month ago because of the police strike. Sporting in pole position for first place. They lead Benfica by 4 points with one less match played, and they could potentially go 7 points up depending on their result on Tuesday. We have the Cup second leg between Porto and Guimarães on Wednesday. Porto won the first leg in Guimarães 1-0. Porto with that advantage. They come back home to the Dragon to play Vitória Guimarães. But Vitória Guimarães this past weekend beat Porto in the Dragon. So interesting. Porto goes to Guimarães, beats them 1-0 in the first leg of the Cup. 3 days later, Guimarães goes to Porto, and they beat Porto in the Dragon. Well, they're going to be playing again next week, midweek, this time going to Dragon. And again, Porto has the 1-0 advantage after the first leg. The winner of that 2-leg affair, Porto Guimarães, will advance to play Sporting in the Taça de Portugal in Jamor at the end of May. And then next Thursday, we have the second leg of the Europa quarterfinal between Benfica and Marseille. Benfica winning the first leg 2-1. Again, as if you're a regular follower in this podcast, you know when we get to the knockout stages, I think Portuguese clubs need to start winning their first leg matches by at least 2 goals. So I'm not really comfortable with this 2-1 result. But I'll talk about that a little bit more when I get to the Benfica report a little bit later on. But so we have a lot to talk about. Match day 28, second division report getting very close, an update on women's football, and then, of course, the player and manager abroad report. But I'm going to start off with 2 things. First, I'm going to talk about Ruben Amorim. I've got a lot to say about the situation with Liverpool, but I want to start off talking about a lot of the questions that I've been getting regarding, do I think that the big three, and we're referring to Benfica, Porto, and Sporting for all the new listeners to this podcast, do I think that all 3 of them are going to be losing their managers this summer? And my question is, I think so. We know the rumors with Liverpool and Amorim. I'm still not ready to say that's going to happen. Again, I'll give you my thoughts on that coming up here in a few minutes, but potentially that could happen. Roger Schmidt is in a bit of hot water at Benfica. If he does not win the title, that will only increase the pressure on him. But if he makes a run in the Europa League, maybe that does save his job. But the question is Roger Schmidt, will he be coming back? There were some rumors this week about the special one, José Mourinho, who has been seen at a lot of Portuguese games, including the ones in the Estádio da Luz. I don't see Mourinho, even though I think, 2 episodes I had talked about how he was interviewed by Sport TV and they asked him and they said, would you ever come back to manage in Portugal? And he said, of course I would. I'm a manager. I have to be open to opportunities. But I just don't see it. Many Portuguese managers, and this will happen with Ruben Amorim if he moves on, very rarely do you see a lot of Portuguese managers come back to Portugal. Once they leave, and obviously the money is bigger, they're playing in leagues. A lot of managers in Portugal, as you know, are frustrated by the refereeing and all the other things that come up being a manager. I just don't see him ever coming back. But I see Mourinho possibly leaving. I see Schmidt leaving. And I see Sergio Conceição from Porto possibly leaving. If Pinto da Costa wins the elections coming up here in about 2 weeks, Pinto da Costa, of course, Conceição holds him in high regard. He's been president of the club for 40 years. To me, it's the best story going on in Portugal that doesn't have to do with what's going on in the pitch, is who will win the Porto election, Pinto da Costa or Andrés Villas-Boas, the former manager looking to get into the top-level executive of a Portuguese club. That's going to be a very, very big deal. And, if Pinto da Costa loses that election, which, by the way, it looks like it's very close, would Conceição want to come back for Porto? Although I think Villas-Boas, in one of the newspapers, it was said this week that he would be open to talking to Conceição about the future. So we shall see. So Braga already lost their manager with 7 match days left. Arthur Jorge, as we know, went to Botafogo in Brazil. And by the way, he already lost his first match there. But Braga did do the smart move, Antonio Salvador getting one of the hottest young managers in terms of who has the potential to be a great manager, and that is, of course, Daniel Souza Varroca, who took Arroca when he took over back in the fall from relegation to seventh place. He did a tremendous amount of great work last year with Gil Vicente keeping them up. He's a former Villas-Boas assistant, which is why I thought maybe he would have an opportunity as well to maybe go to Porto and manage if Conceição left. And by the way, I don't even know if there's a signed deal yet. I'm not even sure if he could sign a deal because he's still managing Arroca. Again, I throw that up in the air because that could be a possibility if something changes later. Maybe he doesn't go to Braga. I'm not even sure, to be honest with you, if Braga officially announced it. I'm not sure. So there's a lot of question marks. But yes, we could potentially see when the season starts in August, Braga, oh, obviously we know they're going to have a new manager potentially, Benfica, Porto and Sporting could all have new managers, and there's plenty of time later to talk about who that might be, but I think that's very interesting. And now let me get to, and I know I have a lot of people listening for the first time, a lot of Liverpool fans, media, fan media, whatever it is. A lot of people have been asking me questions about Ruben Amorim in Liverpool, and I've kind of talked about this in my previous episodes, and I'm going to continue to talk about it here. And let me just say that when you do what I've been doing with PortugueseSoccer.com for over 25 years, whenever a Portuguese player is linked with a big English club or a manager is linked, a lot of times you'll get the media that will want to ask for my opinion on the rumors. I used to get it all the time with Bruno Fernandes. I mean, people asking me about, you know, Marco Silva, you know, with him going to full. I mean, you get that all the time in this job. People DM you through Twitter or X, whatever they call it these days. People email you. And what's interesting a lot of times about a lot of the media, and, you know, you have the media, the Independent, the Daily Mail, all those. Then, of course, you have the big reporters with The Athletic. And then you have, which is what I kind of consider myself to be to a certain extent, although I'm not sure yet what quite to label me. I read an article once, and they call this fan media, which means it's not official media. It's basically reading the newspapers and the media and then reporting what they report. And then, of course, whether you do a blog or a podcast, you put it into your own words and you give your opinion, which is sort of what I kind of do here. Although if you listen to this, you know you're getting my opinion on Portuguese soccer. But people always ask me my opinion. A lot of times they don't like what I have to say because they want that great answer of, oh yeah, this guy, if he goes to England, he is going to change your club and you are going to be, he is the next Jose Mourinho. And a lot of times when it comes to players and managers, I like to be conservative because in Portugal, and I think I've always said this for many years and it continues to ring true, when you manage a Portuguese club, you're managing a club to win, but you're also managing a club that needs to put young players on the pitch to eventually sell those players. When you go to England, you are not putting players on the pitch for value. You are putting players on the pitch to win trophies. It is a different mindset. Don't get me wrong. The talent that's in Portugal is very, very, very good. Of course it's very good, especially at the Portuguese level. But when you go and manage a big club in Europe, let's say, and we're going to talk about the Premier League here with obviously all the interest in Liverpool, you can't go to Liverpool and lose two matches in a row and think everybody's still going to love you. You're only as good as your last match. And I think my biggest concern with Mourinho, or really any Portuguese manager, to be honest with you, and let's remember, I remember when the special one, you know, after he won the UEFA Cup in the Champions League with Porto and he went to Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea was a big name, but they're a bigger name now. Back then, way, way back then, they were a good name. They were a good club. But when they got bought out by Roman Abramovich, the club started to spend serious money and it became a really, really big club. And obviously it was easy for Mourinho to go there because he was able to basically get the players that he wanted to win. That would be an adjustment for Mourinho to be in a position to get the players he wants instead of hoping the club can buy these great young South American, Eastern European, Asian players or young Portuguese players and turn them into players. So what I'm trying to say is there's an, you go from managing the Portuguese style of young players, three-way race most of the time with Benfica, you know, Sporting and Porto, to all of a sudden now you're managing, and literally every week in the Premier League is a derby and a Portuguese Clásico. There is no easy matches. Maybe every once in a while there is, depending on one of the teams at the very bottom, but every match against, let's say, the 10 best teams in the Premier League is a big deal, and the focus on you is big. Ruben Amorim has done everything right in Portugal. Ever since he started as a manager at the lower levels to where he is now, you know, he went to Braga, did great there. He's been at Sporting. He's in pole position to win his second Liga title in 4 years. Remember, Sporting hadn't won the Liga title the prior 19 years before he got there. He has done a fantastic job in Portugal. The question is can he adapt to English football? I personally think going to a more mid-level, modest club would be better for him to adapt and then make that big move. Wolves, Fulham, West Ham, all these other great clubs with big resources as compared to a Portuguese club. You got to look at it that way. I'm not saying they're comparing them to, you know, a City or a Chelsea or an Arsenal or United. I'm looking at those clubs' resources at the mid-table compared to the Portuguese. A lot of those mid-table clubs in the Premier League are worth a lot more money than a Portuguese club. So I think for me the biggest question, and, you know, people don't like this answer, and then eventually they'll interview somebody else, and then they'll come back to me and say, you know, after listening to your recent podcast and listening to all our guests, we realized that your point was a little bit better. And it's very simple. Can Ruben Amorim go from Lisbon and Sporting to another league where the mindset is different? You need to win major trophies, and not just one every year. You need to win a few. As opposed to in Portugal, where most important thing is the Liga, but you can survive. You know, if you don't win these other trophies, it's okay. You need to win the Liga. You go to Europe, especially a club, you know, like Liverpool, you're expected to compete for the Champions League. And if you're not in the Champions League, you're expected to compete. So it's a whole different dynamic. My other thing that I always talk about is, you know, I thought Sporting was a very good club against this team from Italy, Atalanta, who, by the way, just beat Liverpool, I think, today. I don't know if there was the final result, 3-0, but I saw they were winning 3-0. I still think Sporting was better than this team, but they weren't. So the question is do Portuguese clubs do better against clubs outside of Portugal? And the way we've been seeing our UEFA rankings drop is these last few years, if you're brand new to this podcast, one of the things discussed here is that we have been dropping significantly in the European rankings and having less and less success. It's great to see Benfica still alive, but potentially we should have had at least two or three Portuguese clubs alive in Europe. And we've never had a Portuguese club play in the Europa Conference League because the fourth and fifth place team in Portugal never qualifies out of the qualifying of the summer to get to the Europa Conference League, the Europe's third biggest competition. So I think Ruben Amorim is a great manager. He is full of potential. I think that if it's not going to happen right away, it will happen in the future. He will be at a big club, and he's going to be very successful. He's going to be very, very successful. But when you manage in Portugal with the talent that he has, with the exception of maybe 2 years ago, he's pressed all the right buttons. But I just worry that jumping from Lisbon to London, Liverpool, City, whatever it is, I just worry sometimes that there's a bit of a, that people get excited about the potential. Now, I could be wrong, and he winds up being one of the greatest managers ever, and I'll lead my words. But I think I'm being more conservative with him. I'm not necessarily saying he's not a great manager, so don't twist my words. I just worry that going from Sporting to Liverpool is a big jump, and it's a different mindset. But so far, he has shown, up to this point, that everything he has done works. And I think that's the credit that I give to him. But I still will have to see him go to a more modest club when he leaves Portugal, have success, understand not just only the English language. I'm not really sure. I've never heard him speak English. I think that's something that obviously he's going to learn that. But I think that's something that's very important to have. Obviously, he would probably have English assistants with him to help him, ones that he could trust. But it would be a tough task all around to make that jump. And, you know, there are a lot of managers in Portugal that have gone on to manage in Europe, in bigger clubs. I just think it gets harder and harder with the fact that all the best talent is consistently only going to a handful of clubs. And I think it would be tough for him. But I do believe in the long run, he's going to be an awesome manager. I think there's a lot of talent. People ask me who's going to be more successful in the future, Conceição at Porto or Ruben Amorim, at Sporting. I think both of them could be very successful. I'm actually quite surprised, although sometimes he's not necessarily the easiest person to work with, I'm actually surprised that people don't talk about Conceição for some of these jobs, because Conceição, when he took over at Porto, took over a club that was having severe money problems, gotten a little bit better, not by a whole lot, had to bring back in his early years when he came from, I think it was, what was he, Lille? I can't remember what club he was at in France, and then he came back to Portugal to manage Porto. He didn't have the greatest team. They were bringing back players on loan. I mean, he still had a lot of success, and he's been one of the more successful managers. So I'm surprised, attitude aside, that most people aren't putting Conceição in the conversation, because what he's managed to do with Porto has been fantastic. You know, I mean, has been really, really fantastic. So I think, to sum it up for all the Liverpool people that are probably listening and will only listen to this part of the episode, I think he is a great manager. I wish, my opinion, that he would have gone to maybe a more modest club and continue to work his way to a big club in Europe. But at the same time, he has shown so far, to his credit, that everything he has done so far in his career up until this point in Portugal, he's been one of the best managers in Portugal, and there's no denying it. But remember, we're talking about a manager, not a player. Players that sign for big clubs in Europe that are sold by Portugal go into a situation where there's a bunch of other great players already there to help them. He's going to be the manager and the major decision maker. And I think, to me, at a big club like that, that involves a lot of challenges, which is why I think he would take a smaller step. But you know what? If he goes to Liverpool, if this in fact happens, and by the way, we don't even know if this is going to happen. He has come out on Thursday and said that there was no interview, there is no agreement, he's only focused on Sporting, and of course he's only focused on Sporting. What else do you expect him to say? Yeah, I'm paying attention to what my agent's telling me, but I'm also paying attention to Sporting. Of course he's going to say that. Is there some truth to possibly some behind-the-scenes talks? It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. Although Liverpool is a multi-billion dollar organization, although they are a football club, they are also a humongous multi-billion dollar organization that sells a lot of gear. They are popular all over the world. I'm pretty sure that in addition to Ruben Amorim, they've already got three or four other managers that they're considering, and I'm surprised so far. I know there was talk with Xabi Alonso, but I'm surprised that more people aren't talking about other managers because, like I said, I don't think a big club of that size is only talking about one manager right now. I'm pretty sure they're thinking about three or other four managers, just that those three or four other manager possibility, it has either leaked to the press, or the press just liked the idea of talking about Ruben Amorim, who apparently recently was the most searched name in England on the internet. So he's a great manager. If he makes the move, obviously it would be exciting for Portuguese football. Of course, we're losing one of our best assets. But I think for me, we can't get too excited because it is a bit, we would have to see how he does after 3 months to see if he, in fact, is the manager that you think he is. I just think it's a very big adapt. He's got to adapt, and you're going to the most famous, lucrative, competitive league in the world, and that's going to be an adjustment. It's easier for a player to do it when there's already a great bunch of players that are there. It's a tougher, I think, for a manager to do it when you become the number one decision maker. So we'll see. Plenty more to talk about with Ruben Amorim in the future. So we shall see. Let's get going. Of course, this weekend, we have match day 29. It gets going on Friday with Gil Vicente against Sporting. Gil Vicente, of course, looks like they're getting a new manager, Tozi Moreca, who used to be at Tundela, because Tundela made the managerial change because Moreca wanted to manage Gil Vicente, per reports at this point. Sporting, of course, is playing on Friday because they've got this Tuesday makeup match with Familia Gong. Again, a lot of busy midweek football coming up next week. That's the match that kicks it off on Friday. Saturday, we have three matches. Guimarães, what a story, in fifth place, only 2 points behind third place Porto. They will be at home to Feirense with their tremendous goalkeeper, Ricardo Velho. You've got Porto at home to Familia Gong. Porto has lost their last two Liga games. They need to break out of it. They've also got playing that cup game on Wednesday against Guimarães. They've got their 1-0 lead going into the home. Estoril Praia, which has been up and down all year, but has managed to somehow beat Porto three times. They will be at home to Braga. And what happened to Braga last week? They're playing Arouca with their future manager. And I give Arouca credit. We obviously know they're good because they moved up to seventh place from relegation. But how does Braga lose 3-0 at home? How does Braga lose 3-0 at home? I mean, he's a great manager, Daniel Souza, who will soon be their manager. But how do you lose 3-0? Where's your motivation? I know you lost your manager in the middle of the week, but wow, that was disappointing. Then on Sunday, you have four matches: Estrela Amadora, Rio Ave, Portimonense, Casa Pia, Arouca, Boa Vista, and then Benfica will be at home taking on what has been a very good season for Moreirense in sixth place. And then everything will wrap up on Monday with pretty much the two teams at the bottom, the battle of the two teams in relegation right now, 17th place Vizela taking on Chaves. Whoever loses this, if the other team manages to get 3 points, would pretty much be doomed for relegation. Best matches this weekend that I'm paying attention to, I would say for me, obviously, Friday's match with Gil Vicente Sporting, with everything going on with Sporting. Porto Famalicão, because Porto has lost two Liga matches in a row. And Famalicão, which is sitting in eighth place, they've done pretty well with the new manager they've had now for about two matches, Evangelista. I think this is a very interesting one. And I'm very curious to see about Estoril Praia at home to Braga. Can Braga bounce back? I mean, I still can't believe that Braga lost last week, 3-0 at home. I mean, that is just, you know, very, very disappointing. Second division report, man. It is getting very good in the second division. Last week, we saw third place Nacional beat AVS, the second place team. So all of a sudden, Nacional now is only 4 points behind first place, whereas I think about 3 weeks ago, they were 9 points behind. So Santa Clara in first place with 59 points. AVS, which has lost two straight to Nacional and Santa Clara, they are still in second place, but with only 56. And Nacional moves up to third place, 55 points. They're in the playoff position, which is good news for them, but they obviously want to finish top two to get that automatic promotion and return after a two-year absence to the first division. Big matches this weekend from the looks of it. The one that sticks out is Marítimo, currently the fourth place team, still trailing Santa Clara by 9 points. I think they're too far away. But if Marítimo beat first place Santa Clara, a battle here of island teams between Madeira and the Açores, that might give Marítimo some hope for at least third place. So this is, to me, the best match this weekend, and it's going to be played on Sunday, Marítimo, Santa Clara. Other matches of interest, Benfica B is at home to AVS, which has lost two matches in a row. Still sitting in second place, but not very easy. Nacional will be playing another club that's been doing well, but I think it's too late for them. Passos de Ferreira, they sit with 43 points, and I think they won something like their last four or five matches, but I think it's too late for them. But Nacional, again, in the hunt in third place. And I think those are probably, in my opinion, the really two big matches. So again, Santa Clara, AVS, top two. Nacional in third place, only 4 points behind first place. The race in second division has gotten very exciting. Women's football this week, the national team women started the Euro 25 qualifying. They beat Bosnia at home, and then they won the second match away to Malta. So they are in first place in their group B3 of women's Euro qualifying in first place. They are the best team in this group. There should be no surprises. They should win this group to advance. But very good week for women's national team football. As far as the Liga goes, Benfica continues to dominate with 47 points, Sporting in second with 42. These two teams are, in my opinion, going to make it to the Champions League next year, because third place Braga is 10 points behind second place Sporting, and the season's going to be ending here in a few weeks. So Benfica and Sporting. Benfica looks like they will win unless Sporting somehow makes a run. And by the way, what do we have this weekend? Sporting Benfica, and that'll be on Canal 11 in Portugal. So Sporting needs to win that for any hope of still competing for first place. If Benfica wins that, then Benfica will win the women's football again this weekend. And that's just my opinion, and I think that's probably what may happen. So we'll see Sporting Benfica this weekend. Let me move on here now and talk about the player abroad report. First off, Bernardo Silva scoring for City in the Champions League this week. The Champions League first legs this week, quarterfinals, were spectacular. I always tell people in Europe that us here in the States, North America, a lot of these matches are taking place at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's tough for us. Most of us have probably got maybe at least the statistical thing going up, the game cast going up on our phones to at least see the minute and the shots and things like that. But It was an incredible week this week for the Champions League football, and it was a great result. And of course, Bernardo scoring for City. Congratulations to Jorge Jesus and Ruben Neves, winning with their Saudi Arabian club Al Ahly. They both won their first trophy in Saudi Arabia, winning the Saudi Arabian Super Cup. Congratulations to Portuguese manager Abel Ferreira, one of the big names. Again, I'm surprised that more people aren't paying attention to him. He has now won 10 trophies with Palmeiras in the span of about 3 years. I continue to be surprised that none of the big clubs in Europe are looking at him for all the success he's had. Again, big club in Brazil, major expectations, different mindset over there, and he's managed to excel. I'm surprised that some bigger clubs in Europe aren't paying attention to him. And of course, I had also mentioned this week, we saw Benfica. José Mourinho has been going to a lot of the matches. A lot of people are wondering about his future. But like I said, I don't really see him making any move to a Portuguese club. I think when managers leave Portugal, they make so much more money and they have a different mindset managing, that to come back to Portugal and deal with the frustrations, the conspiracy theories, the referees, which many of them don't trust, a lot of them just don't have an interest in coming back. So I don't know why people continue to bring up Mourinho. If I'm wrong, I will certainly eat my words, but I just don't understand why the rumors still persist. Let me move on to the Big Four report. First off, look, Benfica won, beating Marseille in the first leg. But again, you cannot only win by one goal. The goal by Marseille in the second half has made this interesting again. So again, another Portuguese club with a good first leg result at home, but not big enough to take to the second leg. So I'm happy that Benfica won. It's always good to see a Portuguese club winning in Europe for the coefficient. But the truth was, is again, if you're a regular on this podcast, you know my feelings. You got to win by two or three goals. That's the only way that you'll have a higher percentage to advance to the next round. But again, we wish Benfica the best of luck next Thursday in Marseille. Great moment with Sven-Goran Eriksson. Unfortunately, he is terminally ill. Benfica rolled out the red carpet for him with the match against Marseille. A lot of the Benfica former players came back to say hello to their former mister. Very emotional and tremendous job by Benfica and everything they did with him. Great job, Benfica. Porto is in the news this week. Obviously, we know they've been struggling, but the players put together a statement, basically criticizing the referee in the Estoril match. Well, apparently there's been a complaint filed, and a lot of those players that put together that unity, which I think was most of the squad, might be subject to potential punishments. Again, this is as of I'm dropping this episode. This is the story. But I'll be very curious to see what, in fact, happens with that, because you can't suspend the whole squad. And if everybody did the same thing, then who gets punished? And how can you punish one more person more than the other? Curious to see if there comes anything of it. The Sporting, Trincão was in the news with some potential Bayer Leverkusen interest. I think if you're Trincão, stay in Portugal, even though things didn't work out for you. What was he at? Wolves. He was at Barcelona. Stay in Portugal, man. Spend another year or two in Portugal. Continue to grow with Sporting. You'll probably take on a bigger role next year with all the transfers that are coming this summer with Sporting. Stay in Portugal. Don't be going to Bayer Leverkusen. That's just my opinion. And Sporting has scored 123 goals so far this season. That is the reason why they have been successful as they have been, although I expected them to have done a little bit better in the Europa League, which they really didn't. And one last word, Goyacres's agent came out, no surprise. He was asked about the focus of his player. And of course, it's like I always say with the Portuguese press, they ask sometimes the questions that don't make sense. You know, they ask about, is Goyacres thinking about his future? Of course, he's getting a lot of big interest. I'm sure he's thinking about it. But I'm sure he's also a professional and he's playing for Sporting and he wants to win every match. But every time I read an agent say, he is focused on his club, he's thinking of nothing else. Like, what else do you expect the agent to say? It is such a overused thing to say, and the Portuguese press still write about it. But anyway, Goyacres, and by the way, I think his agent said something about that the reason why he went to Portugal was for Ruben Amorim. I personally don't believe it. He went to Portugal because he has a chance to play European football instead of being at Coventry City. I'm sure they realized halfway through the season how special Ruben Amorim was, but I'm not sure if that was the big reason why they made the move last summer. Again, this is my podcast. This is just my opinion. And by the way, that's all it is my opinion. Let me wrap up episode 2 and 8 with the two topics that I always ended with. First off, It was not a great weekend for my favorite team in Portugal, my hometown team in Portugal, my family's hometown team in Portugal, and that is, of course, as you know, Atlético dos Arcos. We suffered a 2-1 loss at home this past weekend. Had we won, we would have been 1 point away from clinching promotion. But instead, we lost at home to the second-place team, Mussong. I think this is the second time they have beaten us this year. So disappointing. Mussong has played one less match, which I still expect them to win when they play Mogassant. So right now, in my mind, Atlético dos Arcos, with three matches remaining, leads by 6 points. There is no goal difference to break a tie between two teams that finish in first. Should Atlético dos Arcos lose their matches and Mussong wins the rest of their matches, the finishing level gets you, forces you into a playoff. Goal difference doesn't make a difference. So if I do the math, they need 4 more points to clinch promotion to the fourth tier. And again, my dream is to see them make it to the second tier. I don't think they have the resources for the first tier. It's just too much. The city's not that big. But this weekend, they'll be taking on our dreaded rivals from across the river, Punta Barca. And again, we need 4 points out of our last 3 matches. We have 9 points to play for. We need 4 points to clinch promotion. Obviously, if this weekend Mussong were to lose, but they unfortunately are playing one of the teams at the bottom, so I don't see that happening. We are playing Punta Barca, who is in 8th place and would love nothing better than to beat their rival Atlético dos Arcos and make it miserable for them qualifying down the stretch. But 3 matches left, 9 points left to play for. We only need 4 more points for promotion and getting the win. And we are playing at home this weekend to Punta Barca. We'd go a long way and hopefully as well see Mussong drop points. So it's getting a little bit nerve-wracking, a little bit nervous for my club in Portugal. Let me wrap it up here with the mailbag addiction. And I'm going to end it here with one email that I received. Actually, I have 2 emails here. My apologies. I have 2 emails. First off, let me start off with Johnny from New Jersey, right here in my neck of the woods. I'm trying to learn the Portuguese language, and I want to subscribe to one of the newspapers, A Bola, Record or Jogo. Who do you recommend I subscribe to, and who do you think comes the closest to properly reporting Portuguese football? Thank you for your podcast. Listen to it every week. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. So I've been doing some thinking about this. So for me, what I do when I go to Portugal, and I've been saying this for years, is I alternate. One day I buy the O Jogo, next day I buy the Bola, next day I buy the Record. Very rarely will I buy 2 newspapers in one day. I will just kind of alternate between the 3. The Record tends to be a little bit more tabloidy. They tend to have the more bigger headlines in their newspaper. Still a very good, I've met some reporters, I've even interviewed one here on this podcast, great reporters. A Bola, one would say, does more serious journalism. A lot of people feel they do a better job of reporting the truth. Record, by the way, is considered more of a sporting newspaper. A Bola is considered more of a Benfica newspaper. But A Bola, which by the way, just changed management, they changed ownership, I believe. Good newspaper. I like their coverage of things that have nothing to do with football, basketball, hockey patins, whatever, all the other stuff in Portugal that doesn't include soccer. O Jogo, a lot of people, only people that read the O Jogo, people say is Porto fans because it is very heavily leaning toward the north, and that is true. But they also do a very good job of covering the other teams in the north. I at one time had subscribed to each newspaper. My advice to you is don't subscribe to just one newspaper all the time. Maybe this upcoming month, subscribe to the O Jogo. Maybe the next month, subscribe to the Record. And maybe the next month, subscribe to the Ebola. And then based on who you support in Portugal, decide off of that which newspaper you want to buy. Again, I have, because of what I do with Portuguese soccer, I read them all. So I try not to be influenced by one or the other. But that's what I would do. Next up I have is one of my regular followers, the Casa Pia Fire Nord lad, big Casa Pia fan, and he wrote this to me this past Sunday. Hello there, my friend. I have another question for the mailbag. With the growth degree in Italy having ended this year, which gave tax breaks on players, wages have reduced the ability of many Serie A clubs to compete for players in the higher wage brackets. With the Liga having a good cadre of talented players and not super high salaries for those most players at smaller and medium clubs, you'd think Serie A teams will start looking more at the Liga for these reasons, and how will the big three be impacted by it? Thank you for answering. So if I understand your question, you're basically asking, with the fact that in Italy, they are probably are not going to afford higher salaries because of some changes there, does that mean that the Italian market will now start paying attention more to Portuguese talent, especially that Portuguese talent at the mid-level clubs and things like that? In my opinion, no, because I think that Italian clubs, if they want to compete at the higher level, will have to just spend more money, and I think that's what's going to happen. For some reason, Spain and England is where a lot of Portuguese players tend to go. I mean, we of course do have players that play in Italy, but not as much as one would think. But in my opinion, yes, I could see them going after, for instance, a Jota Silva. He is a player at Guimarães that right now, although Porto is looking at him, isn't going to demand 40 million. But he's the type of player that you could probably get for 10 or 15 million. But if he goes to Porto, he's going to be automatically increased to 40 or 50 million. So those are the type of players that they're going to go after. Maybe a goalkeeper like Ricardo Velha, Ferenc, things like that. I could see that happening. Maybe the Italian clubs going after those players. But I think at the end of the day, the Italian league, which by the way has been doing very well in Europe, you know, look at the success they've had last year. They've had teams going to the Champions League final. I think at the end of the day, even if they have issues with money and things become more expensive or taxes or whatever, I still think that Italian clubs will solve their problems by spending more money. Folks, that wraps up episode 218 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Reminder, the email, peacesoccercom@gmail.com. You can listen to this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Podcast Addict, YouTube Music. Google Podcasts no longer exists. They're forcing everybody to go to YouTube Music. Obviously, YouTube is owned by Google. And obviously, I also put this up, and another great place to listen to this episode every week. All the podcasts is, of course, on PortugueseSoccer.com, YouTube. I also put the audio there as well, so let me know. And again, peacesoccercom@gmail.com for your comments, or hit me up on Twitter, X, whatever they call it these days, and I'll be happy to answer your questions. As always, folks, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your families, and I'll talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.